we have some interesting times with our predictions. So we'll see at the end of the week who gets it right. And if we both get it wrong, that's honestly pretty common as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hold On To Your Racket, the podcast for Gen Z tennis fans. We're your hosts, Josephina
and Shravya.
Shravya and I are so excited to be creating this podcast and sharing our love for tennis with you all.
Josephina and I are two college gals and tennis fanatics, united together by our on-the-court and off-the-court companionship.
And we're the female Gen Z voices in modern-day tennis you've been looking for, so we hope you enjoy this episode and stay tuned for more. So welcome back to Hold On To Your Racket. It has been a little while, but we did want to get back to you with a very exciting and detailed description of what we have coming with the WTA Finals, one of the greatest events of the year, where we can see kind of like an encapsulation of all the greatest tennis from the entire year in one tournament.
Yeah, I mean, as Josephina said, it has been a while since we have recorded, but we're just excited to kind of get back to Hold On To Your Racket on our own terms and talk about this tournament that we're especially excited for, because I think the WTA this year brought what a lot of people were craving. Tennis fans generally, WTA fans specifically as well, because we saw robust consistency from this group of eight players. I don't think there's a single player out of these eight, okay, maybe you can say a couple too if you really want to get picky, but I really don't think there's a single player in here that wasn't a mainstream competitor all year long. All these women were in the, like their names were up there every single tournament pretty much, and I think that's something that we were maybe lacking on the women's tour the past few years, just because of kind of the shakeup of Serena's decline, Osaka being out, kind of ups and downs of players like Andreescu and the like. But I was really excited to see this year that we saw consistency and competition. And I'm excited to see these women duke it out.
Right. So with that said, let's get right into our WTA Finals preview. So first, we're going to go over kind of just remind you of what the WTA Finals are, because the format is very different from any other tournament they have on tour. And then we will introduce you to, or you might already know actually, the Fierce Ladies of Cancun.
Yes, so the year-end championship, obviously we have one for the WTA and the ATP. The ATPs will be, I think, next month. But the top eight women who amassed the most tournament points this season, so this year since January, will be joining the field in Cancun this week from Sunday through Sunday. So this is the first time the event is taking place in Cancun. We're going to talk about that in just a bit. Really exciting venue. And I think just really exciting that tennis is kind of, especially women's tennis, is finding a new home in Mexico. We saw Guadalajara come up a couple years ago, now Cancun. I'm forgetting which city, but I know there's like an ATP tournament that comes here as well, but it's just generally becoming kind of a new hub for tennis. And I think it's looks pretty in pictures and is exciting to see the tennis world expand its reach. But yeah, Josephina's going to explain the round robin style, because she and I were both also kind of needed a refresher on how this works, because as you said, this is one of the few or even only pro level actual points amassing tournaments that utilizes this format.
Yeah, so right, they start off with a round robin style format until the semifinals. So there's essentially two groups, and then there are four players in each group, and then the top two in each group go on to the semifinals, and then where the winner of each group plays the runner-up of the other group. So they kind of switch up there, and then essentially past the semifinals, of course, we already know the format, then they head to the finals, and then we have a final winner. And the defending champion is Caroline Garcia, but she did not qualify for the finals this year, but she is playing in the WTA Elite Trophy, which is the same tournament, but for the next kind of group of rankings.
Right, like the next eight best players. The ATP doesn't have an equivalent of this, but The WTA has had that for some time now. And the women that we're going to be seeing playing in the group stage, right, this group round robin stage where then we figure out who are the top two players in each group and then they move on to the semis and then the finals, are Aryna Sabalenka, the world number one, Iga Świątek, Coco Gauff, Elena Rybakina, Jessica Pegula, Ons Jabeur, Marketa Vondrousova, and Maria Sakkari. All players that Josefina and I are big fans of and have kind of raved about in previous episodes and in our text messages to each other. So I think that's part of the reason why we're super excited about this. One note is that Maria Sakkari was actually the first alternate. She was kind of in ninth place, but Karolina Muhova, who was in eighth place, had to withdraw due to a wrist injury, allowing Sakkari to have a pretty exciting past few weeks, winning her first title in a while at Guadalajara, I believe, and then making it into the draw here. But she will be in attendance.
Yeah. But then, like we mentioned earlier, this tournament is taking place in Cancun. And as many of you might have seen on tennis Twitter, the stadium was still very much under construction in very recent days, kind of approaching tournament start. So that means, because of course players get there early, players get to tournaments early, right? So they had to there were kind of resources lacking. Aryna Sabalenka shared on Instagram via video story post that there are only two practice courts available until Saturday and only one stringer on site. So it's honestly just a shame on behalf of the WTA, considering this is like the tournament of the year. This is the culmination of an entire year of elite tennis, and this is where the best players in the world all gather together, like the 8 best female players in the world. And it's really just a shame that these athletes aren't being treated like the elite athletes that they are. They probably got worse treatment than they would have at a 250 anywhere else.
Yeah, and especially because, as we noted, these women have never played a tournament in Cancun before. Like, that makes it all the more necessary to get kind of the practice that they need. A lot of them are coming from the Asian swing as well, just all the way on the other side of the world. So you need to be able to get accustomed to the climate, to the courts, to the stadium environment, because as you said, the stadium was pretty much like very much under construction until just a couple of days ago. And Sabalenka actually also said today in an interview at the finals, and I saw this quote on Twitter from the Tennis Letter. She said, quote, "I'm not happy that we couldn't practice on the match court," meaning like on the stadium. "I think this is not the level for the WTA finals. We literally have 1 hour today, like 45 minutes to try the stadium. This is something I'm not happy with. I'm pretty sure the rest of the players are also not happy." She also said, "This is not conditions for the WTA finals, so it's not great. Usually we need like 3 to 4 days to adjust to the conditions, but we'll see. I guess it is how it is, but I hope that next year the WTA will do a better job." So I remember there was also a lot of outcry against the WTA, well, not a lot, but disappointment about returning to the China swing this year, because obviously the disappearance of Peng Shuai last year is what, or was it last year or the year before? But that kind of...
The year before, yeah.
The year before, that kind of, you know, led the WTA to cancel its China tournaments, but those came back this year. So that, along with this stadium and practice court and stringer controversy, has really been disappointing to see at the end of the season.
Yeah, and honestly, something to consider is the fact that they've had so little preparation time could add to the unpredictability of the outcome of this tournament. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into account, because these women have been incredibly consistent all year, but once they face up against each other, essentially anything can happen. And then you add these conditions as like another random factor, and you just get an even more crazy tournament. So we're excited to get into who's going to be playing this year. And like we said, there are two different groups in this tournament, and they will each play round robin format. And the groups are named after cities in Mexico.
Yes, so Josefina is going to help me with the pronunciation of the groups. So can you introduce the first group?
Okay, well, Pronunciations in Mexico are very different, but I hope I'm getting this right. Bacalar group, the Bacalar group, which would include Aryna Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina, Jessica Pegula, and Maria Sakkari.
Yes, and the draw ceremony happened last night, which was Friday. The pictures from the draw ceremony were fantastic. I'm excited to see the backdrop of Cancun kind of behind the courts and all of that. I think it's a beautiful location for a tournament. What I did notice was that all the players were wearing white dresses except Iga. She looked amazing. She was wearing red, but I saw a tweet from one of the doubles contestants, Ellen Perez, and she said that it's because the finals like kept switching up on them what the dress code was. Like first it was all white, then it was tropical, then it was like you can wear whatever you want, like whatever colors you want. So I guess most players had already settled on white, but I loved Iga's dress nonetheless. But obviously we're gonna start off by talking about world number one Aryna Sabalenka, who has arguably had the best year of her career. She clinched that number one ranking in September after reaching the US Open final. And, you know, thinking about what titles she has won this year, those three titles include the Australian Open and WTA 1000 event in Madrid. And Josefina and I have often talked about how Sabalenka is someone we've always had belief in because she has that fight and game power. She just needed to learn how to hone it in, a little bit like Alcaraz, honestly. Someone who has that, like, fighting spirit and really powerful, hard-hitting game, but just needed some practice in restraining some of those decisions sometimes to be a more consistent player. And I think her Australian Open performance really proved what we've been yearning for from Sabalenka, which is that she can do it. She just needs to kind of get her ducks in a row a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. What we've been waiting for from her is consistency, and she definitely gave that to us this year. So just looking at her Grand Slam record, first of all, she's been so consistent across every single surface because she's reached at least the semifinals at each Grand Slam this year. And then, of course, making the US Open Finals in addition to that record and winning the Australian Open. So we definitely did not doubt her ability to stay at the top, even since the beginning of the year. Since last year, she's been showing great improvement, and we were just waiting for her to really perform at the Grand Slams because she was doing well at the kind of the overall WTA event level. But really the question is whether she can carry this consistency into next year, kind like Swiatek has been able to do, which is what makes her such an amazing player and competitor. But I think for now the question is, can she carry this consistency into the WTA finals as we approach this tournament, especially since we've seen how she's been reacting to the conditions at the tournament? So she's already kind of had this negative mindset, it looks like, about the tournament itself. So I really hope that doesn't carry into her match mentality.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because we never really know. I mean, Sabalenka's mental game is something that people have talked about a lot as well, but she has seemed to do a really good job at that this year. But another player that, you know, kind of rose to the scene in a different way than Sabalenka, I would argue, was Elena Rybakina, because she had that, it's fair to say, surprise Wimbledon 2022 victory. But she is yet another example of a player who, perhaps not at the level of Iga Świątek, but who a player who has remained relevant and consistent. She's currently the world number four, and this is her WTA Finals debut, but she won two WTA 1000 titles this year at Indian Wells and in Rome, almost achieved the Sunshine Double by reaching the Miami final, couldn't get the title, and she also reached the Australian Open final this year. And obviously that consistency at the high level is something that was really exciting to see following a Wimbledon victory that left a lot of people questioning whether Rybakina is going to stay relevant. But she has, and I also think she has also been a fierce competitor among the other top women this year. Like, she has a 3-0 record against Swiatek this year, which was crazy to me to kind of reflect on.
Yeah, especially since Swiatek has been such a consistent and strong player just throughout the past few years. But things really winded down for Rybakina after the French Open. She had to withdraw in the third round due to illness. But hopefully she's had some sort of momentum shift. Of course, as we got into the later stages of the season, she reached the semifinals of the China Open, which is a 1,000 tournament that's pretty substantial. And she defeated Sabalenka in straight sets along the way. And as we said, Sabalenka has been in top form all year. So this is definitely a promising sign as she approaches the finals. However, we can't really say what we expect from her because it's kind of been just like that's all we've seen from her in the later stages of the season. And it's really a question as to whether she can carry that momentum into the finals or kind of harness that really strong energy she had at the beginning of the year later in the season.
Another one of our favorites who's in this group is Jessica Pegula, the world number 5. This is her second straight WTA finals appearance, but last year she didn't do that great, so we're wondering if maybe this year is her time to shine.
Last year she lost every single match in the group stage and did not even qualify for the semifinals. And this was actually directly after she had won the Guadalajara 1000 tournament. So she had promised kind of good momentum riding into the finals last year, but could not follow through. So that says something about what she might do this year. Hopefully not, but we'll see. But Pegula says that the key to her success this season has been consistency. So she reached the round of 16 or better in 16 of her 18 tournaments this year and has had 0 opening match losses this year. So this is actually also the first time she has won 2 tournaments in one season. So she won the 1000 in Montreal and just last week the WTA 250 in Seoul. And then she's also reached the Australian Open quarterfinal for a third year in a row. And in addition to that, she's won 41 hard court matches this year, and that is the most on tour this year. And the finals are on hard court, so hopefully that says something good for her. So overall, she's had a very solid year, but her results from last year's final are concerning because she did have a solid year last year as well. But as she said, the key to her success this season has been consistency. So what she said essentially is like, yes, on paper, I've won less tournaments, but she won more matches this year. And that's what got her into the finals for a second time. So I think that's definitely something to be considered because I really think that she's matured and her mindset has changed from last year when she did lose those 3 round robin matches. And I think this year, with a new mindset kind of and using that kind of thinking that she could just be consistent and kind of bringing that consistency into this tournament, I think that could be very good for her. I just hope she can harness that energy.
Yeah, Jessica Pegula is one of my personal favorites. I don't think, you know, last year's results at the tournament are anything for her to be concerned about really, because I think she's continued to establish herself now as her big kind of debut, I guess, in the mainstream stage was when she reached that Australian Open quarterfinal 2 years ago. And to see that she kind of made her third straight one this year, I think was like yet another indication that she would be having a really good season this year, reached at least the round of 16 at every slam. So I think this could be good for her, and obviously hardcore tournaments are where she excels. Lastly, obviously, is Maria, well, not obviously, but lastly in this group is Maria Sakkari, who is the world number 9, came in because of Muhova's withdrawal. Maria Sakkari has been someone who people acknowledge is a very tough player, but she hadn't won a title in quite some time, and she's kind of, you know, reached, people call it the Sakkari semi-final curse. I remember at Roland Garros a few years ago, she reached the semis or kind of in the late stage and kind of bowed out there. And that was really heartbreaking for her. And people always talk about, as I said, the semi-final curse. She kind of, I hate to use this word sometimes, but she just choke at the bigger stages sometimes. And when she won the Guadalajara 1000 tournament just last month, in the same country, you could see kind of how emotional she was about it, and everyone was like really happy for her because it kind of showed that she was you know, she had been fighting for it for so long. She's also done well on the 1000 stage overall this year, reaching the semis at Indian Wells and Madrid. And I don't know, I feel like the Guadalajara win, she probably has some love for Mexico right now. It was fairly recent. So she's someone who I honestly don't expect much from, but I don't think it's going to be another typical soccer-y situation where she kind of reaches the bigger stage and then that's when her performance declines. I'm optimistic that this could be something different.
Yeah, I really hope you're right about that. And like you said, I feel like the Guadalajara win for her was a really big breakthrough. She was incredibly emotional after that win. She said for the first time, like in a really long time, she truly felt joy playing tennis mm-hmm. throughout that week at that tournament. Because before that, she had lost in 3 consecutive first-round Grand Slam matches, and she even spoke out about considering taking a break from tennis because of how substantial and just horrible those losses were for her and for her mindset regarding tennis. But she said that what helped a lot actually was her fan base urging her to go on, and I think that she really took that love and channeled it in her week at Guadalajara. And so she had a very weak year in Grand Slams, but was still incredibly consistent in overall WTA tournaments, especially like in the 1000 tournaments, like we said. And that's how she qualified. So she has had a strong end to the year in the Asian swing as well, reaching a semifinal in Tokyo and also another quarterfinal. And that is essentially what got her the 9th spot at the finals. So she's very unpredictable. She's a hit or miss player. That's a pun. but recently she has been doing better. And I really like that she's been able to kind of end the year on a pretty strong note, reaching later stages of tournaments after that win in Guadalajara. But I really wish we were able to see her actually win one of those tournaments so she could really kind of clinch that momentum. But anyways, she's hopefully going to use that, like you said, just keep that positive energy going. She was undefeated in the group stage last year here, but she lost in the semifinals to eventual winner Caroline Garcia, who did not qualify this year, as we said. But hopefully this is a tournament for Sakari to really just do well and kind of, I don't know, like harness that positive energy that she had earlier in the year when she won her first tournament since 2019.
Yeah, which is crazy. Josefina, our next group name is
Chetumal. All
right. So the Chetumal group is kind of composed of our next 4 players or our remaining 4 players. First of all, Iga Świątek, the world number 2. We're not used to seeing that number next to her name. But as, you know, on that note, she has more than just the championship trophy on her mind here, because it's the year-end world number 1 ranking that's also at stake. We mentioned this in the beginning, but Sabalenka actually clinched it from Świątek after her performance at the US Open, which Świątek obviously won last year, but then had a pretty early exit in the round of 16 after losing to Yelena Ostapenko, out of all people. I remember I was very surprised upon seeing that result, but Świątek had been world number 1 for 75 weeks, so since April of last year, that's over a year. But, you know, obviously has remained a relevant name since then. And kind of, you know, her possibility to get the number 1 ranking back is somewhat slim, but you know, this is a player composed of the top 8 players, so anything can happen. But if Sabalenka is able to reach the tournament final with a 2-1 record in the group stage, the top seat is hers, and Świątek only has a chance at reclaiming her spot if she reaches the final. So there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts kind of dictating these situations as always, but essentially Iga needs to get to the final if she wants to take that number 1 ranking back. But I mean, she's had a stunning year this year yet again, so it's definitely not out of the picture.
Yeah, she definitely has a good chance of doing that, especially considering she is the player that she is. I really like that she's kind of solidified herself as that player that we can count on. And really all of these players in the tournament have as well, especially this year. This has been the year of consistency for the WTA side. But Iga has won a striking 5 titles this year, including her 2nd French Open, Doha, Stuttgart, and then her home country tournament in Warsaw, and then also the WTA 1000 China Open in Beijing, which was pretty recent considering the Asian swing just happened. But like we said, even with this amazing year, 2022 was still her year. She had a whopping 8 titles and that crazy 37 match win streak. But what's important is that she stayed consistent and relevant even this year. Like, even more than consistent, she's been doing amazing. It's just crazy that we consider that below her level because of just the impossible things that she did last year. But she's been really one of the best players in the world this year. And Iga really brings it at that big stage when it counts. And especially the China Open victory so recently would be a huge boost of confidence following kind of an early US Open failure to defend the title, and also the fact that she has the number one ranking on the line. So we definitely think that she is hungry for this win, especially reaching later stages of the tournament, because she has so much at stake and she has that ability to go for what she wants and really bring it together in order to do that. So I really hope we can see her do that, because I'm rooting for her this tournament.
Right. And even though Swiatek did not defend her US Open, the woman who did claim that title is here, Coco Gauff, the world number 3. I think we all know how historic of a season she has had, and she has shown maturity, poise, and her steady rise finally catapulted her to the stage. I think this was bound to happen, but we saw a glimpse of this coming, right, in her French Open Finals appearance last year, and I think she remained patient, which is so important. And she, you know, she worked with Brad Gilbert, her coach, who joined her team, and this is her 2nd WTA Finals appearance, so she is also someone who, even at such a young age, has been there. But I think in a more, I'm honestly more reassured by her rise than I was by the likes of Osaka and Andreescu, who kind of came out, or even Kenin, who kind of came out of nowhere. And then, like, obviously each of them struggled in some ways with that. With Gauff, it's been, in a way, kind of always reassuring to know that, like, something big was coming, because it was more of a gradual buildup, I think. And we've kind of reached that stage where she's kind of burst onto the for sure Grand Slam contender now that people have seen it. And I think coming off of the US Open hard court swing, which was somewhat recent, but even still, that confidence is huge, because before that, she was having kind of a shaky start to the season otherwise.
Yeah, so she lost in the first round in Wimbledon to Sofia Kenin, out of all people, of course. But honestly, what I remember about Coco in Wimbledon is that is really where she had her debut, reaching the round of 16 a couple of years ago. So I really hope that she can do well in that tournament in the future. And now that we know she has the capability to win at Grand Slam, I really hope she can get that title eventually. Like we said, she has time. There's no rush for her to do anything. But she has been so incredible about just kind of doing well with all the pressure she's had on her career and throughout her career, because she started doing well so young. But we've seen this year that she's really a mature player and she has the capability to be amazing. And the US swing really showed that as well for her this year, because even after that first round loss to Kenin in Wimbledon, she was able to really pull it together by becoming the City Open champion and then the Cincinnati champion, which is a 1000 tournament, of course, another amazing win. And she's won 4 titles overall this year. So the Auckland tournament, City, Cincinnati, and then, of course, the US Open. So her first Grand Slam, an incredible win just overall. And she's reached a career high ranking of number 3. And she is just 19 years old. So this has been just such an amazing year for her. And the fact that this is kind of, this isn't her breakout year, you know what I mean? She's just 19, and this year has been a culmination of her already pretty, like, established career. So it's just amazing what she's been able to do. And she's really just an inspirational player to the younger generation.
Yeah, and, you know, I saw this article a couple days ago that Sports Pro Media just named her as the 12th most marketable athlete in the world. She's only 19, and to have her all the way up there is really exciting. So I, you know, that was really, I was happy to see that.
Yeah, something I've noticed, which is very cool, is that my friends who don't necessarily follow tennis, they know her name. Mm-hmm. People know Coco Gauff's name, and I think that's so incredible, and that's kind of new for tennis, because when people say tennis, they usually think, okay, Djokovic or Serena Williams, but we have a new and young player that has actually been able to kind of break out onto the media specter, and people know Coco Gauff's name, and I think that's just incredible, and it's incredible for tennis as a whole as well.
Yeah, I think seeing that Gauff and Alcaraz are becoming marketable names on both sides of the sport are exciting about tennis's future, even as we're kind of seeing the exit of, as you said, kind of the big three, or the Serena Williams, Venus Williams. Like, we're seeing a new generation kind of making, being impressionable on a new generation of fans as well. And Coco Gauff is also here in the doubles WTA finals with Jessica Pegula. They were the number one qualifying doubles team. So honestly, awesome season for both of them. And someone else who we, you know, love to cheer for, and who always has a smile on her face, she's deemed the Minister of Happiness in Tunisia, is Ons Jabeur, the world number seven. Now, I forgot about this, but she actually had a knee injury at the beginning of the season, and she had to miss the Middle Eastern swing, which is obviously where she gets a lot of her support, but she's honestly loved everywhere, so I think, you know, she's met with such excitement at every tournament that she goes to. But regardless of that, she did reach her second consecutive Wimbledon final this year, which was obviously heartwarming. She had a great year last year, reaching Wimbledon final and US Open final. But obviously, she's kind of having an Andy Murray beginning to her Grand Slam success, and that all these finals, and has yet to grasp that title. And, you know, all Jabeur fans have their fingers crossed that that's going to happen someday.
Yeah, I think her Wimbledon final loss this year was akin to Roger Federer's loss in 2019 to Djokovic for me, just on the scale of heartbreaking to heart-wrenching. But still, she made a quarterfinal appearance at the French Open, and she won two tournaments this year, a 500 and a 250, so that would be Charleston and Ningbo, respectively. And last year's season on paper was phenomenal for her because she won so many tournaments, so many big tournaments. But this year was even better because although she won less tournaments, she was more consistent, kind of similar to what Jessica Pegula was saying about her own season, that she's been able to be more consistent and win more matches. So last year, it looked like for Jabeur, her record was essentially that she either lost in the first or second round of tournaments or reached the final or won the tournament. So this year, instead, she's just been able to consistently reach the later rounds of tournaments. And I think this has been better for her. And I think it really takes a more healthy and more patient mindset to do that. And although her Wimbledon final was heartbreaking and her speech does make me cry every single time, I think, I can't say that it was good for her, but she did seem, of course, it was sad, but she seemed like she was still hopeful. She's still hopeful for the future. She hasn't been broken down yet. She is, after all, the Minister of Happiness. She knows what we need from her, and she is prepared to give that to us because she's all about positivity, and I really think and I really hope that she can use that as she as we get into the WTA finals. So last year she lost 2/3 of her group stage matches, so 2 out of 3, and did not progress to the finals. So it's It might be a little unpredictable from her this year, but she did just win the Ningbo 250 during the Asian swing. So I hope that she can kind of take that win and use it to her advantage because she's won something so recently. So hopefully it's a good finals for her, but I really have to say that she is going to be unpredictable, but we of course only wish her the best.
Yeah, and I think, you know, she also got pretty ill at the US Open and had a pretty early exit there also. And when you were talking about the Wimbledon speech, I just remember Kate Middleton coming up to her and, like, kind of consoling her. That's what I always remember. But I think as De Boer fans, we always remember the sad things. And then that way, we're kind of like the next kind of era budding Andy Murray fans, who I know at the beginning of his career had to kind of witness all of his finals and never grasping the Grand Slam victory. But it'll come, and I think, you know, the consistency throughout the year must do a lot for confidence for her and Pegula. Like, even though maybe last year they were reaching more trophies or deeper in Grand Slams, there's also something to that we can't even gauge, but that the players feel in their psyche, that if they feel like they can walk into a tournament and know that they're getting through the first two, three, four rounds with ease or, like, confidence to do that, that is a whole... that's a huge advantage psychologically, in terms of having that consistency backing you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And after all, it'll just make us better and more hardened tennis fans because we are able to kind of withstand all this loss, but we know that it's all for good. It'll eventually turn out well.
For sure. Our last player on the docket here in this group is Markéta Vondrousova, the world number 6, arguably the player that we least expect to have made it to this stage if we had been speaking at the beginning of the year. But she is this year's Wimbledon champion, the first unseeded women's singles champion in the Open era at that tournament. And she is someone who we saw kind of come to the fore at Roland Garros a few years ago, actually. And I think she also had some success at the Olympics, but I might be wrong. But She got the silver medal. And she, however, you know, that talent has always been there. There's no doubt about that. She's a lefty. She has a big serve. Her slice is amazing. She plays a fair bit of doubles as well, so she has variety in her game. But she's had a historically injury-ridden career. This is the first season she's actually been able to play from start to finish in some time, and it kind of goes to show that when you have a, you know, healthy body and are really taking care of your injuries and being smart about all that, and even obviously comes with some luck, she went from world number 105 in March outside the top 100 to now number 6. So that's, you know, that's pretty telling about her potential.
Yeah, exactly. And she even said that she was at last year's Wimbledon tournament in a cast as a tourist. Mm-hmm. And then the very next year she was able to win. And it's really amazing. It's like, it's so incredible that she has been able to kind of really showcase her talent this year. And the fact that a consistent player on the tour might be taken away from us by injuries. And the fact that she's been there the whole time and she's just been hindered by what's been happening to her. I think that kind of unpredictability on the tour is just incredible. And it's something that actually makes the sport very interesting because we have these players that have just been there the whole time, but they haven't been able to release their potential. And then all of a sudden she can, and this is what we get. And it really seems like she's been Antje Boer's greatest rival this year because Markéta beat her in the Australian Open in pretty early rounds. And then, of course, in the Wimbledon final. And the fact that we kind of looked at it from Antje Boer's perspective, because we're fans, of course. So we were kind of expecting Antje Boer to win, and it kind of seemed like written in the stars because she had lost last year. But then it was actually Marquetta's story at the same time, because it was her first chance to really show her talent and show what she's made of, and she was able to do that. And I think the fact that we have all these rivaling amazing tennis players, it's just, that's what makes the WTA tour so interesting at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. She, as term in terms of recent results though, she did lose in the first round of the China Open, but her tournament, her last tournament before that was the US Open, where she did make it to the quarters. So we haven't seen her that much in terms of, you know, frequency at the tail end of the season, but she has remained consistent, and, you know, we hope that she makes the most of her WTA Finals debut. And with that being said, we're going to wrap up this episode with two, you know, quick notes. First of all, we're going to share our predictions for who we think is winning this tournament, and then we're also going to share our favorite moment of the WTA season this year and why that was our favorite.
I think you should start with who you think is winning. It's always, we have some interesting times with our predictions, so we'll see at the end of the week who gets it right. And if we both get it wrong, that's honestly pretty common as well.
Yes. So I feel like the WTA Finals winner is always someone we don't really expect. Like, when I looked back at my notes and saw that Caroline Garcia won it last year, I was like, I'm sorry, what? So that's why I'm going to pick Vondrousova. I think she's been the wild card this entire year. And, you know, obviously has the potential to take down those big players and be that demon slayer, but I do feel like she is one of the underdogs in this tournament, so I'm just gonna pick her.
That's a really good pick, yeah. But I'm going to say Sabalenka just because I feel like she would win just so that she could keep Iga's number one rank. Because I'm sorry, but I consider the number one spot Iga's no matter what. Even if Sabalenka technically has it, I think the fact that she still has to kind of fight for it in this tournament means that Iga still kind of got her hands on it. And I really hope that she doesn't win, but then again, because of that, she will win. And that is Aryna Sabalenka.
Very good points. And in terms of my favorite moment of the WTA season, I think I'd have to say Coco Gauff's US Open championship, like her trophy acceptance speech. She was so poised. It was so emotional. As you said, it was something that resonated with people our generation who are not just tennis fans. I think when she talked about her father getting emotional and kind of just all, you know, it was so mature. And you know, she was still shaking, though, because it was a crazy moment. And, you know, I was lucky enough to witness that whole thing live. So I was just, like, very much absorbed in the, like, it was just, you could tell that it was historic. So I think it was really exciting to see that.
Yeah, definitely. I just feel like it's so amazing. Like, I feel like when we were little and watching all these big tournaments and all the finals, I was just like, wow, I can't possibly fathom what it feels like to win that tournament. Because it felt like they were all old people playing tennis, and I was just like, wow, they're so cool. And then now we have Coco Gauff winning the US Open, and I'm like, wait, I relate to her. I kind of understand what it would feel like to win. Of course, I can't really understand it, but just to a certain level, we're able to relate to her on a deeper level. And I think that's just so amazing. And it really, it opens a new dimension to the sport with all the youth coming in because of her. But I'm going to say that my favorite moment of the WTA year was Alina Svitolina's Wimbledon semifinal run. Because it was after she had a baby and after returning to the tour after a pretty long hiatus. And then just, I don't know, her and Gaël Monfils, the best couple on tour, just undisputed. And I really like the fact that they were both able to have such a good year on tour.
Thank you so much for joining us, and that is Game, Set, and Match for today.
If you like this episode, please let us know and stay tuned for more. We'll be providing you all the coverage of upcoming tennis and, of course, all the tea on tour.
Email us at holdontoyourracket@gmail.com for any questions and leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening on.
Hold On to Your Racket is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
Follow us on social media at holdontoyourracket on Instagram and at HOTYR_tennispod on Twitter.
And remember, my name is Josefina.
And my name is Shravya.
And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to hold on to your racket until next time.